Hey everyone, it's Jalian. This is the second of a two-part tribute to the late Dr. Jonathan Cedric Smith, whose commitment to cultural memory we shared in our most recent episode. Today, we're doing things a little differently. I'm handing over the mic to family, friends, and community members who were impacted by Jonathan's passion for social justice and will be carrying forth the legacy of love that he left them. The stories will be threaded together by words from Rochelle Smith, wife of Dr. Jonathan Smith.
My late father-in-law, J.C. Smith, was a Black Baptist preacher, founder of Bethlehem Temple Missionary Baptist Church. And Jonathan had just graduated from Princeton, and he was home for the summer, and he was also minister of music at the church. And so he was playing the piano when I saw him, and I was going to church to enrich my life, make it better. And he was, you know, home doing what he normally does, which is playing keyboards for the church and leading the choir. And so that's how we met and then started dating.
Through the years, church and spirituality remained a guiding force in Jonathan and Rochelle's lives. It was a way for Jonathan to serve his community and multiple congregations through music.
My name is Reverend Dr. Harmon E. Foles. I'm pastor of the Blessed Hope Missionary Baptist Church here in the heart of the city of St. Louis at 2621 Russell Boulevard. I've known Dr. Smith for some 33 years. He has been our minister of music for 31 years, and I know his wife and his family. He always talked about the young people in our church, how we've got people all across the country and out of the country who, by his impact, they've got major jobs and corporations all across the country and out of the country. And we set up a scholarship fund for persons who were graduating from high school to go to college. And so we must have given out probably some 40 scholarships to individuals to reach their goals as far as education. I was telling the church yesterday that we're going through a transition without him being at our church. And I was telling them that on Saturday, I was driving my car and I heard music, of course, you know, gospel music. And when I heard the organ and piano, I broke down in tears, mainly because when he would play, he would make you feel so special to know that you're God's child. And he would help you to understand that you still have joy no matter where you're going through. So he helped me to experience a part of joy that I never knew.
He was a leader when it came to social justice, healing, forgiveness, embracing difference, embracing the value and the wonder and the celebration of difference. And that's how we raised our children. I mean, we were very intentional about who came through our threshold in our home, you know. It was poor people. It was rich people. It was highly educated people. It was people without much education. It was, you know, all different faiths, all different cultures, all different walks of life and stations of life.
I am Rachel Smith McCourt, and I am Jonathan Smith's middle daughter.
There were multiple people who would come over for dinner, who would come over for drinks with my parents, and they didn't look anything like us. They were white, they were Asian, they were gay. And for a lot of children, it's like you really see who you see at school, and then you see like your parents' friends who they either knew from high school or whatever, like they all sort of looked the same. But for us, it became very clear that my parents were like, you aren't only supposed to see people who look like you in your circle. You're supposed to see people who look different from you, see the value of the added benefit and value of their presence in your life, and support them in all of the things that they do.
You know, we talk to our children about who are all these people who are coming through the door, you know, gay, straight, it didn't matter. it was important for us to know that the way you treat people, not only, you know, treating them well and treating them with love and acceptance and welcoming is the right thing to do, but also it is something that individuals need in their lives that sometimes they don't get. And so in our house, we, you know, really put a high value on treating people with respect and acceptance and love and welcoming. And so that played out in Jonathan's life. You know, whether he was teaching a Bible lesson, he would bring up social justice, you know, in the Bible lesson. He would say, he would bring up leadership. He would bring up love. He would bring up acceptance. He would bring up, you know, just being really intentional about how you treat your fellow humans and beings, you know, while we walk on this earth.
My name is Lauren Ashley Smith, and I am Jonathan Smith's oldest daughter. My dad wrote this in 1985 in his journal. I want very much to promise my daughter, me, not to brag, I want very much to promise my daughter a new world in her lifetime. It is a daily struggle for existence. Who can think of liberation? I want so much to promise my daughter a new world. I can only hope and work.
Jonathan's desire for liberation and his passion for fatherhood would extend beyond his household to touch hundreds of lives. So up next, we'll hear from staff and students at St. Louis University about how he created a welcoming space on campus. And then we'll learn how he worked to shape culture and practice compassion in the St. Louis region. During the Ferguson Uprising, Dr. Jonathan Smith had been working for St. Louis University as a professor for over a decade. And although people around the world know the name of Michael Brown Jr., fewer know the name of Vonderrick Myers Jr., who was also killed by a police officer that same year in the Shaw neighborhood of St. Louis City, where Dr. Smith was living at the time. The loss hit hard for Black students who grieved with Vonderrick Myers Sr., a longtime employee at SLU. Ms. Regina Walton witnessed Dr. Smith's response to the Occupy SLU movement, and then how he stepped into senior leadership roles to manage institutional responses to student and community demands for change.
He would basically be there in person every day to support those students, whether it was to bring water, food, blankets, et cetera. He was there in full force, and he showed the students that he really cared and he believed in standing up for what was right. And he didn't care in some sense whether he had to stand alone, but every time I would look out the window, I would see Dr. Smith there supporting those students. And he seemed like a person that you could really come to for questions. He was very open. He was very passionate. You could see it on his face. He had deep concern for what was going on. The outcome of all of this was the appointment of a special assistant to the president. And that required a search committee. And I served on that search committee. And Dr. Smith, he was so deep. I'll tell you, intellectually, professionally, and all the above. And I just never met anybody like him. And shortly thereafter, they appointed him to the position. And I thought to myself, he's going to need help. He's going to need an assistant. So that's when I applied for the job and I was offered the job. I always felt like the mom and Jonathan was the dad. And it was more open you get to be yourself. And the one incredible thing that a lot of the students and even faculty and staff talk about, the big bear hugs that Jonathan would give people. Oh my, people look forward to that. And the other fun part, that we had his dog Rowdy in the office sometimes. So if students come in, they're stressed, they would come in and rub Rowdy or get a hug from Jonathan or a positive reinforcement from me. Get a bag of chips, have some candy, have fun, just stay here. The students, some faculty, and some staff felt like he was perfect because, in essence, where can I go and feel comfortable? Where can I go that I get to be me and I don't have to worry about it getting back to anybody else? Where can I go to express myself without being judged and just feeling like somebody really cares?
Jonathan Pofus, I go by Jono. Dr. Smith and I met while I was a student in undergrad back in fall of 2013. He was always in the African American Studies office that was McGannon Hall on St. Louis University's campus. Very welcoming brother, always doting and always encouraging. In response to what happened with Michael Brown, there was a series of months and months and months. It went on beyond a year of day-to-day direct action happening. And in the spring of 2014, students on campus were also dealing with different issues around, you know, just direct racism, people putting hateful messages out, drawing slurs in public spaces on campus. And then you had like individual incidents where, you know, sisters on campus were being called the B word and all kinds of stuff going on. And so we presented some demands to the administration we felt were going to help increase the recruitment, retention, and the rate of graduation for Black students, but also just change the climate on campus in a meaningful way. And the administration received it, and it was just a document, right? And so Occupy SLU kind of was a follow-up to that. Dr. Smith had a role and influence on just how we were organizing, is that, he always reviewed any kind of op-eds that were being released to help raise awareness about different issues that were happening. But also Dr. Smith, you know, he came from a lineage and a tradition of direct action of the Black Freedom Movement. You know, he also talked about how his father was arrested during a direct action with Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. So because of his experiential knowledge and, you know, his family connections and his ties to the work, he always gave pointers on, you know, what to do, what to look out for, different cautionary tales that have guided my direction when it came to a lot of the work with Tribex or even with organizations on campus like the Black Student Alliance. In so many ways, he embodied the attributes of, you know, Black royalty, Black freedom struggle, all those different things. And so I hope folks continue to remember him and celebrate his legacy, but also do that in action.
My name is Devin Thomas. I was a student at St. Louis University, graduated in 2020. Relationship to Dr. Smith, I called him Pops. He was like a father figure to me at school. He referred to me as his other daughter, but he did that a lot. He was such a dad. I remember the first meeting we had. So I was running for a position in student government, like this, some like diversity position. So he called me to his office. I'd met him before, like casually, but not, you know, intentionally. Called me to his office and he said, "Devin, I heard about you on campus. I want us to not be adversaries." And I was like, "Cool, what do you mean?" He basically explained that oftentimes student activists and institutions have conflict, as we often did. But he was like, "I want us to love each other. So that's how we can build that now. So when you argue later, when it happens, we have like a base of love to build upon." A few years ago, like the Student Success Center has regular like career fairs, and they had ICE come to a career fair. So of course, me and a few of other students were ready to, act a fool on campus. And I thought back to what he always said. He'd be like, before you go protesting, call me. So I shot him a text and I was like, hey, Pops, just so you know, I'm about to pull up on ICE because they're going to be in the, I think, like the student center. He was like, wait, I'll take care of it. And he did. And sometimes he couldn't, or like there were too many barriers to that. But it was nice to have someone who would just listen to students whenever there was a concern. The night after he passed, there was a lot of fear among students because so many of us had not been adults without him. And I think wondered who we get advice from. But if you listen, I think you can hear him all the time. And there are so many instances of the last month or so where I have wanted so badly to call him, but I feel him everywhere.
Jonathan brought his expansive idea of family to his work for social justice at St. Louis University. But off hours, he was an arts advocate, avid learner, and according to his daughters, the coolest dad. So up next, we hear about Jonathan outside of work. Jonathan grew up as a pastor's kid, a role that comes with its own set of expectations. But he found freedom to express himself in the arts.
On stage, he was a character. You know, it gave him an opportunity to be freer to do what the script said. And it was really great because even as devout as my mother-in-law, who's still with us, and my father-in-law was, it didn't matter what show Jonathan was in. They came to see it. They let him be in it. You know, even if it didn't, you know, always align with everything that came across the pulpit on Sunday, they celebrated that.
My name is Ron Himes. I'm the producing director of The Black Rep. He was very, very smart. His writing, very creative, very Black. And I think that he had a perspective of the world that he was able to channel through his poetry. And that, you know, it was all sort of different too. Very, very creative, very heady, very provocative. And so we had talked on a couple of occasions about putting some of his poetry up. And I think that, of course, you know, when we began working on Do I Move You, last collection of poetry, you know, we didn't do it thinking that we were honoring him in any way. You know, it was, for me, the first of, you know, hopefully a series of projects that we were going to do using his poetry and celebrating his work. And as it turned out, yeah, it is, we have a lasting tribute to him and to his writing with that piece. I think that he was yearning to get back on stage. And I think that we would have maybe seen that at some point.
He always saw art and acting and theater as a conduit for understanding and crossing cultures and educating about culture. He coached in theater and speech, you know, all of our kids, and he coached other kids as well.
He has hundreds of students that they would call him Dr. Smith or D. Smith. Who would just literally come to our house or call to talk to him. Like, these were our peers, our friends, and they'd be like, well, is D. Smith home? And it's like, but we're peers, what, talk to me. But he just was so funny and so likable that there was no shortage of people who looked to him as a mentor, whether it was as a father or as a teacher or as, you know, a big brother. Like, he just was so giving of his time and his wisdom and talents to his community.
I would like people to know that if they feel down, if they feel counted out, if they feel like, you know, they cannot make it, know that even without Jonathan knowing them, they're loved, you know, and that they are lovable and that they are valued.
And when we were together, he would always say, you know, you are my Rachel Sweet. Do you know that? And I'm like, yes, I guess I know because you tell me. So I guess I know. And there was a moment when he was in the hospital last month. And he was like, he always asked us, do you know how much I love you? And I'm like, I mean, you tell me, so I think I know. But he would also ask, do you know how special you are?
He was a person who thought outward. You know, he looked outward in ways to help. And sometimes we have to help ourselves and encourage ourselves. But oftentimes to get ourselves out of our own funk or out of our own depths, we have to come outside of ourselves and seek out those that we can help that are worse off than we are.
Me and my mom's like family mission statement was always to do what we can with what we have. And so for my dad, you know, what he had was intellect and he did what he could with it, but he would dole it out in places and moments when it was appropriate to help people, not to elevate his own image.
He won an award at Washington University for having like the most books and the largest library, you know, of books of one single person. I think of the graduate students that were at WashU at the time, it was, he had like 5,000 books, you know, and we just started using the books as furniture, you know, and bookshelves, making books bookshelves, you know, figure that out. But, you know, he knew things about religion, about education, about culture, about history, about food, about agriculture, about business, about finance, about medicine, about science. I mean, it was just, there was no end. So Black Google it was.
I want people to know Jonathan Cedric Smith. I want people to know his brilliance, his intellect, the lives that he touched, the girls that he raised, the heart that he had, so that when I'm gone, his name will still be here.
And I also want people to know that he, even though he is not here to be a grandfather, that he was so excited about being a grandfather and him having the opportunity. He would joke that we all thought my mom was going to be like the super grandparent, but he was like, he was like, I already feel like I'm being catapulted into a different atmosphere because I cannot wait for that grandchild to get here. And as soon as they're here, I won't be able to let them go. So he was going to give a whole bunch of love to his grandson. And I want people to know that he knew that he was going to do that.
Just know that his legacy still lives on, and to stay tuned, you know, for those things that we hope to happen in the future to truly honor this great man who I feel his spirit is still with us.
This episode was produced by me, Jalian Yang, and will be the last episode I produce for We Live Here. It's been an honor to share stories about race and class in St. Louis and to uplift changemakers like the late Dr. Jonathan Smith. This episode was co-produced by the brilliant, insightful, and Murrow Award-winning Lauren Brown, who will be taking over as lead producer for the show. This show is overseen by Jade Harrell, Director of On-Demand and Community Partnerships for St. Louis Public Radio, whose creative energy and ideas know no bounds. St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis. From St. Louis Public Radio and PRX, this is We Live Here.
Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
From PRX.